Welcome to the HR Room Podcast, the podcast series from Insight HR, where we talk to business leaders from around Ireland and share their advice on how to create the HR systems and workplace culture that's right for your business. For show notes and bonus content, simply visit www.insighthr.ie/podcast. And remember, if you need any HR support, get in touch with us at Insight HR. Whether it's conducting a complex workplace investigation, filling a gap by providing you with a virtual or on-site HR resource, or providing advice via our HR support line, we'll help you resolve whatever human resources challenge your business is facing. Okay, let's get started.
Hello and welcome to a very special episode of the HR Room Podcast, as today we celebrate International Women's Day. International Women's Day, as we all know, is a global day celebrating the social, economic, cultural, and political achievements of women. And today also marks a call to action for accelerating women's equality. So to celebrate with us today, we're delighted to be joined by two inspiring women. First up is a designer, businesswoman, social entrepreneur, and a passionate advocate for women's equality in the workplace, all rolled into one. It's someone I'm sure you all know. It's the wonderful Sonia Lennon. Thanks for joining us, Sonia. How are you?
Thanks, Owen. Delighted to be here.
And as always, we're joined by our very own Mary Cullen, founder and managing director here at Insight HR. Hello, Mary. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks, Owen. Great to have you here, Sonia.
Thank you.
Brilliant. So let's jump right in. So I suppose coming to yourself, Sonia, first, can you talk to us about your own kind of career story?
Oh, it's a rich tapestry of madness, to be honest with you. I didn't go to college after school. I really wanted to jump in. Before I wanted to jump in, I wanted to be a fashion designer. And my parents really didn't think that that was a good idea. They didn't think there was a career to be had in it. They didn't think I'd make enough money. And to be honest with you, looking back, if I had gone to NCAD as I had wanted to straight after school, I think they probably would have been proved right. Because, you know, the madness that I would have brought to my creations at that point wouldn't even begin to reflect where I am now with Len and Courtney and my understanding of the woman we serve, of the market, of her needs, of shape and form, of what clothes do on the body. That all had to be earned through experience. So I suppose the alternative when that didn't happen, and it wasn't that they stopped me, in fact, just to clarify, it was that my portfolio was burned in a tragic fire in my school on my leaving cert year. 1986 there was a fire in Loretto on the Green. Tragically, six lives were lost. I had nothing to bring to the table. That wasn't the worst part of that story. Obviously, it was a terrible tragedy. So my little plans were thwarted. So I decided to go straight into fashion retail. And really, I kind of always say, I wish that sales and psychology were core subjects on the curriculum, because, you know, throughout our lives, we either sell a product, or we sell a service, or we sell ourselves to other people. And that's on kind of perpetual rotation in every permutation of our career. And I really learned how to do that, and learned how to sell respectfully, understanding lifetime value of the customer, understanding that a quick sale for the sake of it was not the wise move. And because I was dealing in luxury goods at the time, so it was far more valuable to me and to the business to say, no, that does not look good on you. And for that woman to feel respected and to trust me and to come back and buy again. So all of these were the lessons that I brought to my career as a stylist. I could go on and on, because it was a very long and windy road. There was nothing linear about it, but somehow I ended up on TV with Brendan Courtney. And from there, then we launched a couple of businesses. And to date, I suppose I have founded four different organizations, two nonprofits, two profits, one failed profit, one still in growth profit. So yeah, it's I've had every perspective of the story.
Brilliant. So I might touch on some of those in a minute, Sonia, because I know there's a lot to cover there. So that's fantastic. And I suppose for yourself, Mary, obviously with Insight HR here, your business now for over 20 years as a founder, managing director. Can you talk to us a little bit about your kind of story, your career?
Well, it's nowhere near as exciting as yours, Sonia. But I guess everybody has their story in terms of how they got where they got to. My upbringing was probably a little bit unusual in that my mother was a great believer in social justice. And you know, I grew up on a steady diet of Germaine Greer and the female eunuch and all of these, I suppose, feminist readings and teachings, because she was very active in her lifetime in the whole area of social justice and always particularly interested in feminism. From my perspective, probably at, you know, 17, 18, I was like, please don't talk to me about feminism, almost allergic to it, because it was, you know, one of those things that my mother had really passionately believed in. I studied history, pure history, in college. I was actually in the class of Diarmaid Ferrisher, the great historian. And so the classes were hugely interesting and exciting. When I came out of college, my first job was with an organization, not for profit, called Cooperation North at the time, which is now rebranded as Cooperation Ireland. And I was involved in North South peace and reconciliation activities with that organization. And I absolutely loved the job. I was extremely passionate about it. Unfortunately, the money wasn't there in the role for me. And so I started studying human resource management by night as an area of interest, and went on then to work in finance, software, tech companies before eventually I relocated from Dublin to Kilkenny for lifestyle reasons and set up Insight HR, mainly because there were no opportunities for me in the southeast of Ireland to go into a HR role. And I was continuing to commute up and down to Dublin a number of times a week. And the main reason we had relocated was for family purposes, because I had small children. That's the story of how Insight HR started. No great big idea about what I was going to do with it. At the time, it was simply about work. As time went on, I got more and more of that work, which I was unable to do on my own. And Insight HR has grown from that. And we do, thankfully, now have a direction owned. So you'll be glad to hear.
And that's why I'm here. Thank you very much.
We do have a very clear direction and vision and plan.
So I suppose, as we said there, Sonia, I suppose for yourself, a huge area of what you've already done, what you continue to do, is, I suppose, that piece around women's equality in the workplace. I suppose with your work from Dress for Success up to the other countless things you're kind of doing at the moment. Can you talk to us a little bit more about that specific kind of area of your career?
You know, the mamas have a huge role to play in our informing our philosophies. And my dad, you know, my dad was very progressive. He was at my birth in 1968 in Donegal, which was unheard of. It was such a market event that the nun who was in the delivery room took him out for a pint afterwards because she was so impressed with him. And, you know, and my mum was, you know, like really her independence, her financial independence was paramount to her. So she worked all through my childhood and my sister's childhood. And it was always have your running away money. If you're not part of the revenue, you're not part of the decision-making table. And so all those kind of mantras were drilled into me. And I suppose I had a ridiculously lovely upbringing. You know, I was loved and supported and nurtured. And, you know, even when, you know, I went to private education, even when I snubbed my nose at third level, which my parents had really wanted me to do, you know, they weren't happy, but they didn't stop me, you know. So it was only then when I started to work on off the rails, working with women who maybe hadn't had the legacy of support and were, you know, struggling to rebuild themselves, having had their confidence knocked. And so all the women that myself and Brendan worked with in Off the Rails had been through their own, you know, their own difficult journey, if you like. And then I thought, well, if you can do that with an individual, surely the same principles can apply at scale and more democratically to a wider audience. And that's where Dress for Success came from. And at the time I had been asked to lend my support and advocacy to certain charities. And I didn't like the kind of haphazard nature of that. And I thought, well, if I am going to give my time for social justice, for social causes, I want that to be strategic, I want it to be planned, and I want it to be niched into my ability to make a difference. And so when I read about Dress for Success at the time, I saw it as an opportunity to leverage my ability to make women feel more confident through, you know, helping them. They're in the inside of their head and the outside of their bodies, and supporting them to economic independence. But more than that, my main attraction to the mission was supporting children, because, you know, I was like, I was adamant that it was going to be some sort of children's cause that I was going to align with. But then when I read about Dress for Success, I saw it as an opportunity to actually fix the problem before it began, that you actually inculcate a culture within the home of self-esteem, of independence, of possibility. And that's what I had when I was growing up. And I'm not saying that I am, you know, I am the absolute product of that, but it certainly gives you a leg up that you feel you can achieve what you want to achieve with some hard work and determination.
Absolutely. And I think, and I suppose from all the things you've said there, Sonia, and from, I know, your own work as well, Mary, for the both of you, really, you've both seen, thankfully, a lot of progress, I suppose, in the kind of gender equality area of things across, I suppose, everything it touches. I suppose, question for both of you, but I'll come to yourself first, Mary. How far have we kind of really come as a country when we talk about things like gender equality in the workplace or even elsewhere?
I mean, we've made progress, and so I don't want to be negative here on the podcast. We have made progress, but actually, interestingly, today I did a webinar on the gender pay gap reporting. And for that webinar, I started thinking about, you know, what does that actually mean? What matters to the HR people that I was presenting this to? And I thought to myself, well, look, there is a job to be done in number crunching, calculating figures, figuring out that pay gap, which exists globally between men and women. Men on average earn more than women. That's not an Irish phenomenon. It's not a British phenomenon. It's not a US phenomenon. It's in the Western world. Men tend to earn more money than women. And I really started thinking about, yes, there's a job to be done around number crunching. But what actions arise from that, from a HR perspective? And that's really about promoting equality, not just for women, but in general terms, equality in the workplace, where we don't have those kind of gaps, where, you know, women are paid equally and fairly, that our education system looks at some of these issues. Because one of the things that I looked at was the fact that when it comes to the subject offerings in girls' schools, if they're missing things like mechanical drawing, you know, woodwork, engineering, if they're missing programming, software programming, and those kind of things, or those subject choices are clashing with things like home economics or other French or something like that, the chances of uptake of them are slim. If they're not offered at all, then how is somebody going to progress into science, IT, mathematical roles? And it's clear that there's no difference in terms of intelligence or competence or capability from a female perspective. Women are no less intelligent than men on average. And so why is it that they're not represented in those industries? Why is it that as you go up the ladder in an organization, that the reality is most C-suite executives are male? These are just simple facts. And, you know, while I would have been very inspired by my mother, obviously I went through my teenage years of rebellion, where I was sick of the kind of feminist talk that she talked about. As I have grown into my own woman and my own independence, these are things I have thought about very carefully. I have a daughter myself. I have two granddaughters, and, you know, I would like to think that the world in which my two granddaughters come into is going to be much more equitable, that when they come to work, if they make choices in their career, that they will be facilitated and enabled by our education system, our society, and our organizations to succeed. To be treated as equals and to be represented at the most senior levels of organizations. I read a stat that even with gender pay gap reporting in the UK, some people estimate that it might take 60 years to actually bring about equality. That's not good enough, really, from a female perspective. There would be 60 years before that gap is closed, before organizations take it on board. So yes, there's progress. Yes, I believe in progress, but I think there is much more work to be done. And, you know, it's important from a societal perspective that people don't automatically tune out and turn off when we talk about these issues, which are important to women. It's about equality. It's not about man versus woman.
And I suppose similar question to yourself, Sonia. I suppose you would have seen, I know you work on the Gender Equality Committee. So you, obviously you would have seen kind of a lot of insights and progress in the area. Any thoughts on how far we've come?
Yeah, I mean, I think just listen to Mary, like the flip side in a way to... women are no less intelligent to men is that there is really fascinating research to support that men have no less capacity to be empathetic than women. And we often think, you know, oh, well, women are much more caring, more empathetic. It really is, if I can find the link, I'll send it on to you. It is the most fascinating read. A psychological experiment to show that what is missing in male empathy is the social reward for it. So we have built a social structure where men are not rewarded for being caring and empathetic. And that's kind of sad, to be honest with you. You only have to look over at what's happening in, you know, Russia and Ukraine at the moment to go, oh my God, this is the worst of man right here. But I don't think that that's representative of, you know, the average man. The average man, I think, wants to be better, wants to be supportive. And the challenge, I suppose, is that we have created workplace cultures where there is no acceptable, respectful mechanism to challenge the status quo. So I often think, you know, it's not that you have to come out screaming like a harpy and saying this is unfair and I'm throwing my toys out of the pram. It's not about that. It's actually about kind of equipping people with the tools to say, can we have a little chat around the fact that there's only men around this decision-making table in a marketplace where there are 51% female consumers? Can we just think about that for a second? Are we making the right decision for our business, for our people, for our citizens, if we can't fully reflect what a female's perspective is? And even in terms of kind of individual interactions, it can be really hard to stand up when you feel yourself and you can see yourself being prejudiced against because of these unconscious biases. But it's like, what are the words that your company chooses to say? Can we just have a little chat about this? Because I'm not sure if you're seeing it from my point of view, because you know, the gender pay gap reporting, the numbers, the pay parity, that's almost like papering over the cracks. What we have is a system that's not fit for purpose at the moment. So, you know, equality is one thing, equity is another. And equity is giving people an environment where their needs are met, even if they're different to somebody else's. And that takes it. That's Shangri-La, you know, that's the absolute gold standard. But if that means that perhaps I need to approach a career progression journey for one person in a different way to another, regardless of gender, maybe I become aware of that as a leader. And that gives me a greater capacity to build a team that feels valued, is engaged, and performs at the highest levels.
And I think my next question is actually going to be what's missing. But I suppose it's kind of a hard one to answer, really, isn't it, Sonia? Because I think a lot of these things are micro behaviors, all these kind of things.
I think what's missing sometimes is permission. Permission from both parties to ask the questions that, you know, some people are worried are going to cause offense, and to stand up and say, can we have a little chat about this? Because there's so much fear in this territory that you're going to say the wrong thing, that you're going to be, you know, pilloried for standing up for yourself, that you're going to be seen as under emotional or over emotional. So it's, and again, I think to some extent, and this is quite esoteric, we have somewhat lost the ability to enter into a discourse about any of these subjects. And we've become so polarized that you're either yes or you're no, you're black or you're white. And life is full of shades of gray. And the more we live, the more we realize that. And I think it starts at the absolute top. This stuff cannot, with the greatest of respect, live in the HR department. It has to be shepherded by the HR department on behalf of the leadership. And the leadership cannot want equity and fairness to begin from middle management up. This has to go all the way to the bottom, so that the legion of lower paid workers also feel that they understand their input and their value within the organization.
And I think building
and that's on your that. And that's your pipeline right there, because, you know, I always say there are two kinds of roles for which we get paid. There are jobs and careers, and under the career watermark there are jobs, but that does not mean that those jobs can't turn into careers with the right mechanisms and coaching and tutoring to make that a reality. And I think much better to reward and advance people who've already committed to your organization and know it than to recruit externally for somebody who's a punt and you don't know them, because I'm not a recruiter, I'm not a HR specialist, but I know that hiring for somebody's attitude and willingness to learn is a massive part of this puzzle.
Mm-hmm. I think building on what Sonia said there, Mary, I suppose what are the kind of key thoughts around what HR teams can do, what leaders can do? Because obviously it's more than, as Sonia said, it is more than the HR function, isn't it?
Absolutely. The HR function can use their influence with the C-suite, with the CEO specifically, because if you're doing your job well, you've got the ear of the CEO and you're able to influence. And, you know, that's not to criticize anyone who doesn't have the ear of the CEO. I know it's not always as easy as it seems, but there are practical things that you can include in your diversity and inclusion strategy. Looking in taking a data-led approach to it in the first instance, what are the pay gaps? So look at OnPost. OnPost has identified that their post-delivery service is predominantly male. So what are they doing? And they have actually managed to bring their gender pay gap down to zero in 2 years, even though there isn't mandatory reporting. And they have identified that there were barriers in the way for women to progress within the organization. So let's look first, representation at the senior levels, representation at board level. Is there a fair gender balance between the two? That's one place to start. Is there a fair gender balance in terms of the management team? Do we ensure that our promotional opportunities are fair, that the questions that we ask at interview are fair? That we don't discriminate against part-time employees who are predominantly female. You know, who's to say you can't take a senior role and be part-time? You know, and if you look at what En Poste did or is doing, they're launching a campaign in this quarter, I understand, for female post-delivery people. Then it's about removing those barriers and making their organization not just equal in terms of pay, but a more equitable place in the first place. And it involves, you know, leadership programs, it involves conscious training of management of individuals. And it doesn't involve treating men as if they're the enemy. It absolutely doesn't. You know, there's a low take up of parental leave and parents' leave, for instance, amongst men. Why? Because it's not something that they think they can do, even if they want to.
Or actually, Mary, that they perceive it as being detrimental to their career. Not that they can't do it, but if they take it, it's detrimental to their career, and which is something obviously that women have been facing, you know, for eons.
And they may well be right, Sonia.
Yeah,
that,
totally.
That, you know, the attitude towards a senior leader looking for parental leave, it's unheard of. You just don't see it within our organization. So I think until those things change, and like you say, Sonia, it is about conversations, but it's about real conversations at the senior level where we're not blaming, we're looking at our data and we're looking at how we can go about changing something together, because I don't believe that the next generation are going to wait 60 years to be paid equally. And look what they've done in Iceland. They have actually eliminated pay disparity between men and women through accountability, through ensuring that their society is fair and equitable and that men and women are paid equally.
Actually, I've done quite a bit of work with the Icelandic administration around this this piece, this gender pay gap piece. They've done something really interesting, which is an equality kite mark. So product and service businesses are badged to say that they are fair and equal in their practices. And so then, and I love this, it's the consumer's choice. If you don't have a badge, do you want to buy into that service or product? And it's such a simple thing in one way. And I think, you know, you talk about the metrics and the data is absolutely vital, not just the kind of starting point data, obviously, but the progression metrics and the milestones around that. And that's where real change happens. And absolutely, En Poste are a very, very good example of that. And I was privileged to actually host the launch of that zero pay gap report. Interestingly, in it, David McRedman talks about the much higher gap that they have in the bonus area. And that's, I think that's really important. And I think it's important for any business leaders listening to note that even at zero gender pay gap across the board, there are still dark shadows that need to be addressed. And it's not about kind of closing the door and pretending they don't exist. It's actually about owning them and saying, well, we know why that is, because the bonuses during COVID were predominantly the postal delivery staff, who are predominantly male. So that has skewed our bonus numbers. And I actually think that people have great kind of empathy for those stories. If they understand why it is and they understand that there's a will to improve it, that's okay. And I think a lot of the fear around even entering into this discussion is, I know I'm doing it right. I know I haven't got there yet. I'm afraid to put my head above the parapet and say that. It's okay. Nobody's perfect.
Yeah, and I think that's just so important to say, because actually in the UK as well, when they came to look at their gender pay gap. So while organisations found themselves in positions where they were working actively towards narrowing that gap and publishing as part of their figures, their actual action plan or their statement in relation to what they were doing, bonuses, benefits in kind, that whole area is still a little bit grey. So, you know, salary sacrifice and the whole area of shares, you know, if you were getting shares as part of your package with the business, all of that bit of it isn't there for gender pay gap reporting. So, you know, it's really about how far does an organization want to go when they think about it. And, you know, like you say, Sonia, if we're having very real conversations, we're not there yet, but we are working towards this. We are working towards equality. Yes, we don't have enough women in engineering. Yes, we don't have enough women in science. What are we doing to recruit for that, to bring people in? And that's not about giving a person who doesn't deserve a job. That's about making sure that you're not placing a barrier in the way of somebody getting that job, and that your policies and your procedures and that your whole approach as an organization is about inclusivity rather than blame. And too often this argument centers around blame. Men are wrong, women are right, men have done something bad, you know, women do things only good. That alienates men as much as anything else. And we need to work together to bring about a more equal society.
I think it kind of goes back to, actually, funnily enough, we spoke to your good friend and colleague, Joanne Heshen, last week, Sonia, about leadership. And I suppose why I bring that up is Joanne made a good point around kind of big change. You need that kind of honesty, transparency, and reflection on what's actually going on. I think that's something that really applies to this particular area as well, isn't it?
Very much so. And for me, certainly LIFT is a fantastic tool in the tool belt of a respectful and fair and equal culture. There's no doubt about that, because, you know, through LIFT, you're afforded an opportunity to self-reflect on your own leadership, on how your individual relationships are and what your own philosophies are. And I think we're so busy, we're so overwrought with everything and so bombarded by, you know, horrific news, that having 40 minutes, 30 or 40 minutes to reflect on these things is like the world's greatest luxury. Like, forget your Hermes handbags. Like, that is pure luxury. Time to think. This boils down to behaviors at the end of the day, and what drives you forward. I think what's kind of heartening is, you know, we talked a little bit about the next generation coming up. They're not going to wait 60 years. And equally, they're just not going to go to a company that doesn't espouse the values that they hold dear. So, you know, again, we're back into careers versus jobs. But if you're going into a career role and the company doesn't tally with what you believe in, you're finding a different company. So, you know, it can be very, very hard for some people to start this conversation. But I was actually just writing a piece just before you came on about what sort of leader are you? Are you fixed or growth mindset? Because the world is changing all around us. So are you going to stand exactly where you are and let it wash around you? Or are you going to move your own intellect, your own emotional capacity, your own ability to engage with people into a way that is more appropriate for today's world and tomorrow's world?
I think that's probably a bit of a blue sky kind of question to finish with. It's always one. I know they annoy the guests, don't they? When you say, tell me everything in a short amount of time. Yourself first, Mary. I suppose any kind of words of wisdom then, because I know people are going to start thinking about, right, what can we actually do? So any words of wisdom for leaders, HR teams, advocates like myself, men who want to actually make a difference with these kind of things?
I would say be inclusive, include men in the discussion. I think that's just so important to be inclusive. Like, you know, if I look back at the kind of approach my mother's generation took. You know, it did pillory men in some ways. And my mother was probably one of those, you know, super kind and decent people, and really passionately believed in fairness and equality. I was raised with that in mind. And she taught me, you know, that men and their feelings matter too. And to, you know, treat people, you know, as so far removed from you, as opposite to you, is not the case. At the end of the day, everybody's a human being. We face the same challenges, men and women alike, and include each other in these discussions. It's a difficult discussion. It's one that people are afraid to, as Sonia says, get involved in, because, you know, on the one hand, you may have women who don't want to be seen as you know, pushing the feminist agenda. And on the other hand, you have men who are terrified about getting involved in this discussion in case they say the wrong thing. And I think it's really about working together to bring about not just organizational change, because, you know, that's something that's forced upon businesses through, say, gender pay gap reporting and through equality legislation, you know. It's not just about that. It's about what happens, you know, when a woman has a baby. You know, she has a physical reality in which she needs to drop out of work for a period of time. And what happens when she comes back? And what happens when she has another two or three or four babies? What does that do to her career? But it feeds into affordable childcare. It feeds into perceptions. It feeds into organizational attitude and approach. And it feeds into our educational systems. And so it's a much bigger thing, but we cannot do it on our own. We've got to work together, male and female alike.
And same question to yourself, Sonia. Was any kind of final words of wisdom?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of crafting this in my head as I'm listening, and I'm thinking about, you know, the bad rap that fast fashion gets, and justifiably, and I'm thinking about fast HR. You know, nobody ever espoused the notion of fast HR. That just does not make economic sense, you know. And you look at some of the big service firms, and maybe it takes 50 to 60 grand to induct a graduate into their training program and to begin their role. So hiring people costs money, keeping people costs money. Do you want to just throw the baby out with the bathwater just because a woman has to care for an aging parent or a newborn child or has to go for a school emergency? Or do you want to penalize a man for doing exactly the same things? I think we're in a very different world. We're all kind of post-COVID trauma. Our priorities have changed. And so I think our workplace cultures need to grow and change to meet who we are today, because nothing is surer. We look back 50 years and we laugh at how people did things. In 50 years' time, they're going to look at us and go, they did what? So now is our best chance to be the best version of who we can be for today's world.
Absolutely. So thank you so much, Mary and Sonia, for a very insightful and inspirational discussion. A lot to cover there. And I know it's such a huge, huge area. So thank you really, really so much for your time. Thank you to everyone for listening. We'll catch you next week for the next installment of our podcast. So don't forget to click subscribe and join the discussion on our social media channels. And make sure to check the show notes for useful resources related to today's topic. And as always, for HR consultancy services and management you can trust, get in touch with us today at insighthr.ie. Thank you, Mary. Thank you, Sonia.
Thanks, Sam.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us today on the HR Room podcast, the podcast series from Insight HR that helps you create the human resources systems and workplace culture that's right for your business. For show notes and bonus content, go to www.insighthr.ie/podcast. That's www.insighthr.ie/podcast. We'd love it if you subscribe, like, and share the show with any friends and colleagues who are looking for fresh ideas on how to create the ideal workplace for their business. And remember, If you need any HR support, get in touch with us at Insight HR. Whether it's conducting a complex workplace investigation, filling a gap by providing you with a virtual or an on-site HR resource, or providing advice via our HR support line, we'll help you resolve whatever human resources challenge your business is facing. Thanks, and see you soon.